Erlem Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. Hello and welcome again to Verulam Sport Podcasting. Hey, you know they're listening. Verulam Sport in any form, whether it's Verulam Sport 92.6 FM or what we've been doing recently on Verulam Sport Podcasting, we love the old Albanians, the pride of the Hertfordshire rugby scene. And we are on the cusp of a new season. Thank goodness for that. And it's all change for the OAs. We are delighted to speak for the very first time to their brand new head coach, Dan George. Dan, welcome to Verulam Sports. How are you?
Evening, Tony. Yeah, very well, thank you. Very good. Pleasure to be here and a pleasure to catch up with yourself.
Hey, well, listen, it's great to speak with you. I'm excited to, first and foremost, learn a little bit about your own rugby journey and what's brought you to the OAs. Just tell us a little bit about, firstly, your playing career and then into coaching and, obviously, a great new opportunity at the pride of Hertfordshire rugby at the OAs.
Yeah, look, first of all, I'm really excited to get my sort of teeth stuck into the project that is OAs. Having come in this summer, you know, there's a lot of things that we've looked at that we could potentially look at developing from our point of view that really put OAs back on the map, really. But from my point of view, it's a well-trodden path of a rugby player from Wales, you know, travelling down to London to seek sort of a bit of rugby and a bit of game time, really. So started off as a young man in the Scarlets Academy. Came down to London when I was 21, I think it was. Yeah, 21, and played for London Welsh. Had five fantastic years at Welsh. Managed to get promoted with them, which was absolutely unbelievable at the time. It was something we never thought would happen. And it was that whole thing of when we first went up going through the courts and a big court case of whether we could get promoted. But no, brilliant. So managed to get promoted through to the Premiership with them. And unfortunately, the year up there was fantastic from a playing point of view. But as a team, we ended up getting relegated and managed to get picked up after a couple of performances against Gloucester. They saw something in me that they thought they could develop and progress and moved up to the Midlands and spent the best part of 3 years there, combining them and a spell at Worcester. And, kind of dropped out of rugby through a couple of bad injuries in my second year at Worcester and found myself in a bit of limbo, really, not knowing what to do. And it's bizarre. I stepped away from rugby for a spell where I went to work in London. Spent time working in the city, and you know, there's nothing like doing something that you don't really enjoy to refocus your mind on something that you really are passionate about and really want to do. So, managed to jump back into rugby. Blackheath gave me a great opportunity to do that, and that's where my journey into coaching began, really. Slowly developed through sort of doing bits at Blackheath, doing bits at Bedford when I went up to there. But I'd always had a vested interest in coaching and particularly the development side of it. You know, growing up in a household where your father's the longest serving academy manager in pretty much the UK. We've been doing it on Scarlets for 16 years. It was always something that was an interest of me. So, progressed and then went down to London Scottish, spent a year there, which was my first sort of senior coaching appointment, and spent two relatively successful years up at Chinna, and then I've sort of come back to a lot closer to home to London. I started working at Oaklands College, leading the rugby program there, and Chris Waring a year ago, and you know, this appointment for me just kind of went hand in hand with, you know, the location and the ambitions of, you know, the club as well. So it's really nice, and it's a good place to be. You know, I love St Albans, love going there. I just live, you know, stone's throw away, the other side of the M25. But no, I love the area, I love the place. And, you know, the big thing for me now is that I'm pretty much embedded in rugby in St Albans now for the foreseeable future.
Tell you what, that's a wonderful journey then. Again, it seems to me very much like it's in your blood. But what a culture of rugby the Welsh appreciate. I would say, my humble opinion only, that maybe on a par with New Zealand in terms of it being a borderline religion and obsession. I mean, London Welsh there, what a story club. The great commentator John Taylor was a great player there. So many other greats have come through that team, and the Scarlets yourself will know the amount of historic players who've graced that great club, now franchise, over the years. So again, I guess that love, that passion and following it is only going to benefit now as you look to work with similarly passionate people here at the OAs.
Yeah, you know, I've been very fortunate. The places I've been are, you know, relatively steeped in history. You know, the Scarlets and making appearances down at Stradey Park before it all went and stuff like that. You know, still, you look back at that place with fond memories, and, you know, that was probably one of my favourite grounds ever, just because of history and things to go with it. And, you know, the London Welsh team of the 70s with the five sort of British Lions who were playing there and things. And, you know, even up to the Midlands, you know, like Gloucester and teams like that. I've always been privileged enough to be part of a team that has a real big sort of history and things like that. And, you know, coming to a club like OAs, we have our own sort of history, our own traditions. And it's something that I'm very keen to sort of drive it and push forward and moving into this sort of next chapter as we see it, is not just how do we keep those sort of traditions there, but how do we build and create sort of a relatively new chapter in our history again.
I'm really feeling your ambition there. And I'm fascinated because there are politics, of course, in all sports and business fuses. There seems to be a body of thought, not across the board at OAs, that the level they're playing at is perfectly acceptable. And I get that because obviously the more you move up the ranks, the pressures of payments and this and that, they come with it. And, you know, it's difficult to manage. But I'm naive in this regard, and I love your take, because I'm of the opinion, if you're capable of moving up, if you've got that ambition and that culture, again, I look at a team, for instance, like Exeter, who just maybe a generation ago would have been below OAs in the pyramid and have just progressively worked their way up. I'm not necessarily saying that that's like for like what's going to be happening. I'm just interested, Dan, for your take on what you think could well be possible here at the OAs.
Look, I've been fortunate or unfortunate, whichever way you want to look at it, to see both sort of sides of the coin. I've seen it firsthand where we've grown and developed clubs from within, and there's a lot of stock put into the coaching, development, and progression of players. And I've also seen the side where it's very much sort of a financial-driven beast. You know, unfortunately, it got to a point with London Welsh where we saw the wheels come off quite dramatically. And I think that was them trying to chase an unattainable goal in the end. But, you know, I think the ambition was always there for them to try and push those boundaries and go. Now, I think it's all dependent on how you load your squad and how you develop players within it. I think the model and the structure that OAs currently have is a fantastic one, and it really does suit National League rugby. I think what we need to try and do as a group now is challenge ourselves to get our sort of on and off field working together and how we progress and develop there. Look, having looked at OAs from the outside for a few years, they were national one, got relegated. They spent last couple of years national two, sat in around, I think it's like 9th or 10th. You look at all the resources, the training facilities, where they are, and I think there's a lot that can be done there. So for me, it's marrying the ability of how we develop players without losing the identity, really, of what OAs are. You know, at the minute, we've got a fantastic group. You know, I've been fortunate to come in, and, you know, I've not really had to manage or change anything from a backroom staff, from a coaching point of view, only because, you know, fortunate enough to work with Tom Whiteley, with Nick and with Ash, who are real good processors and are real good coaches in their own right. So to be able to come in to fit in with them and for them to make me feel so welcome is brilliant. So I think sort of the backroom side of it and the development pathways there. So it's all about now how we challenge the players, develop the players, and give them the opportunity. Because look, at the end of the day, a coach's job is the Monday to Friday, but the real breadwinners who manage the club and push the development of where the club's going to go are the players on a Saturday. You know, you could be brilliant Monday to Friday, but if you're not on point on a Saturday, then you're never going to get that development. So, you know, we want to try and put processes in places that allow the players to thrive, allow the players to develop, and then, you know, marrying that together with a few things that we're working on off the field. You know, I could see us in the next sort of 4 or 5 years definitely sort of pushing up through the national leagues. That's sort of, I think that's achievable without changing too much of the identity of the club.
Really like the goal there. Just looking into things, it was a strange, I mean, I know it's been amplified with the global situation that we're all working with at the moment, but it was a peculiar season last year for the OAs. A very young squad, and I think that's something quite exciting. Maybe an undersized pack, but they also, if been married to an interesting coaching and rugby philosophy, could actually be advantageous in context. But the thing is, when they were good, they were very, very good. But when they were bad, they were wicked. Strange runs of sort of 5 wins on a bounce and then 4 defeats on a bounce. And that sort of pattern seemed to kind of ambulate throughout the season. I guess from a coach's perspective, over and beyond quality, consistency is one of the things that I guess you would look to embed and achieve reasonably swiftly. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think, look, the reality is there was a lot of good work done last year. So it's more about building on you know, foundations that were put in last year. I think defensively, the boys were excellent last year. You know, so you know, a lot of praise going there for Nick with regards to what he sort of instilled. And, you know, under the coaches last year, the one thing that really did jump out to me was sort of that work ethic, the intensity that the boys played at. I think some of it at times could have been sort of misguided. You know, I think going back through the leagues, they lost 12 games within 7 points.
Yeah.
You know, so close to actually converting them to wins and then rocked them at the league. I think a little bit of experience comes into that, such a young group. But I think with that, the learning that the boys would have had last year and the development, the progression that they will see within those tight losses. I'm a firm believer that a loss is never a bad thing if you learn from it. You know, there's that old saying that, what is it? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. It's, if you can take a loss, learn from it, and be able to progress and develop, then, you know, it's a worthwhile experience. So I think this summer for me is all about trying to get the boys, first of all, get them back in, try and maintain those elements of energy that they have in games. But then it's putting them into different scenarios that challenge them and sort of try and push that learning that they had from last year and how do we develop it into this year. So I think that's the biggest thing, is taking the foundations that we had last year and then sort of really trying to sort of build on it this season.
You certainly don't have to reinvent the wheel. As you say, the foundations are very, very strong. I have a phrase here, and it sounds almost self-evident. I say it all the time, winners win. You had that thing in football, the Fergie time, whereby they found a way to convert a narrow loss into a draw or a one-pointer into the 93rd minute, they get the winner. And again, as you say, shoots of confidence against some of the best teams in the league, even these narrow, less than 7 points, picking up the bonus points, which is a great positive. But I think, and I'm not disparaging the previous kind of culture there, because we love the OAs and we respect them massively. But I think from a kind of mentality, cultural ethos perspective, it's converting that belief that you can win into almost an unerring conviction that indeed you will win. And that is something that I'm sure is going to be instrumental in what will be, I'm sure, a very successful campaign as you build towards your goals.
Yeah, no, it goes both ways. Winning becomes a habit, losing becomes a habit. You know, you find yourself, there's those some teams, you know, the All Blacks are the worst at it, where, you know, you get into the last 10 minutes, if they're within 7 points, no matter who you are, you instantly start thinking, ah, here we go again. Can't we just get that little bit of distance between us and them? Inevitably then, teams start still forcing the game because they're only three, only four. The All Blacks are within a score. A team feels they still have to force the issue. Inevitably then, they come back and they win. And it's the same thing that when you're losing, teams who aren't comfortable being in those positions, teams that aren't comfortable winning, force the issue. They force a pass, turnover ball. So it's a snowball effect. So it is, winning and losing are both habits. So it's how you change those behaviours. And like I said, there was a lot of good stuff in Oasis' game last year, a lot of good stuff, particularly defence, the work ethic. You know, I think their driving line-out was probably the best driving line-out in National League Rugby last year. So it's how we take those foundations now. And I think the big thing is how do we make the environment as competitive as possible? Because the more we compete with each other on a Tuesday and Thursday, you start to breed winners. Everything needs to be competitive. That delivers intensity in training. So again, we try and challenge the boys that it's everything is as competitive as possible, whether it's, you know, a running block, you know, a conditioned game, that sort of side of it. We want the boys to try and win, and we put prizes out there for the boys to win, or we put prizes out there where if you win by a certain amount, the opposition do a certain amount of press up. So things like that, where you put intangible goals for players to win now, so that hopefully as they start to develop and as they sort of progress, you start to see them sort of reaping the benefits of those competitive elements of learning how to win.
I love that, because that again is cultural. And it seems to me that an organic explosion of that, an illustration of that quite recently, I was fascinated to read about the 1,000 calorie challenge that the guys got involved with. Again, I think it started out with a little bit of banter, and it snowballed. I think that was back in early July. A good illustration of the kind of culture you're trying to develop there, I would imagine.
Oh, look, that was excellent. We've been sort of in the background racking our brains on how to engage players and things like that. And it was actually Morgan, our scrum half, came up with the idea of, well, what if we had an internal competition? And the internal competition was 500 calorie buy-in. And it was against all of the teams in the club, so whoever wanted to join. So, you know, from the first 15s, Romans, Gladiators, Grizzlies, all of them took part. And, 500 calorie buy-in and see who could sort of produce the most calories in a day. We were fortunate enough to win that one. So it gave the boys a little bit of a shot in the arm. But from my point of view, something like that is brilliant. It's driven by the players, but also you see the work ethic or the graft that the boys put in. So, you know, James Osborne, director of rugby, sort of took the idea and was like, how do we run with this? And he ended up putting something together that pushed it out to the sort of larger, wider audience. And it was absolutely brilliant. So, you know, the fact that it came from a small idea from within the group, from the players, who they bought into it, and then we sort of thrashed it out, turned it into like a nationwide thing. It was just excellent. So, you know, things like that for us are just, you know, unbelievable.
Again, it's that internal buy-in that over time, these little things, they add up. I'm shocked that a scrum half is competitive. Surely not a scrum half kind of, you know, oh, we'll beat the world. I love that. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, we had a training last night, and we had an element at the end where we had a conditioning block. Then the boys had a 1K run, and then they went back into a conditioning block as just a finisher. We sort of separated the group so we can go more sort of position specific. So all the nines are in one group, centres and halfbacks, wingers, fullbacks. And the scrum half group were by far the most competitive. You could just hear that as soon as they took off. So it was like over a 50-metre course. So it was 50 metres there and back 10 times. Yeah. And you kind of got to like rep number 14. And you got Benny Calder chasing Morgan down. You know, you've got Elliot and one of the new lads, Lawrence, sort of banging for each other. And it's brilliant. It, again, you try and put something like that in, it develops an element of competitiveness, but it just shows as well that you're not going to let each other lie. There's going to be
people,
you know, chasing you down the entire time. And it's brilliant, really good.
I love it. Already you can feel that there's this sense of taking responsibility, which will lead to maturity. There's no guarantees, as you say. If there was a magic wand, we'd all be great rugby coaches, wouldn't we? It's, again, down to the players. But I guess all you could do is instill these things, develop the confidence, and hopefully build towards what I'm sure will be a really rather successful season, Dan.
It's our role as coaches. If we get it right, all we're doing is facilitating the lads. That's the long and short of it. What we're there to do is we're there to put sessions on that keep the boys engaged, keep the boys wanting to come back and develop their basic core skills. Put a game plan in that we feel would be a point of difference that players would want to come to us because of the way we play. And then, like, at the end of the day, you know, I'm under no illusions that boys work 9 to 5. Boys want to come to training and have a bit of fun as well. So there's a lot of game-based stuff. The competitive element within everything keeps that sort of edge in training, which is nice. But look, at the end of the day, you know, you've got some real good guys involved at the club, you know, right from the top with, you know, Rory running the show, you know, with Bruce and Oz there as well. You know, there's some real good men involved in that club. And us as coaches, our role, like I said, is to put things out there. And it's the players at the end of the day that will go out and they will determine whether we're successful or not. It's up to us to give them the tools for them just to go and implement everything.
Hey, perfect. Brilliantly explained. It's been great to talk with you. Just super quick, Dan, before I let you go. Didn't seem to me that the fixtures were on the website. Have you got a fixture list yet? Are we working towards that? Or is there a date? Are we still question mark at this moment?
So we've had a fixture list through. The NCAA have put out a fixture list for sort of a provide September start. Mm-hmm. Reality is we're still not out of phase two yet. Mm-hmm. We're still training in groups of five. Hopefully that'll change over the next sort of 2-3 weeks where we can increase the groups. But I think September might be a bit too soon for us. So there's been a couple of dates pushed out there, but a revised fixture list has been sent out. And I think our first four games are against Worthing, Leicester, Dings and Barnstable. So they're the first four games, the first block that we're going to look to sort of nail down an attack. But yeah, they've sent a fixture list out, but I don't think the dates are sort of nailed down yet.
Yeah, again, there's still many, many questions, but all that we can do is say, for me, it's been great to pose you some questions tonight, Dan. Value your insight, value your time. Always, it's great from us. We love to follow the OAs, the pride of Hertfordshire Rugby Union scene. I wish you well with this new project. I'm sure they'll appreciate your ambition and your focus, and I'm sure it's going to be a great season. Thanks again, Dan.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tony.